This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. At the start of the legislative session, we spoke with a couple of Republicans in the State House about party priorities. Senator Joe Benning stressed the importance of school funding reform.
We actually have a pretty good educational system in this state. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but the funding mechanism long ago disconnected the average taxpayer from being able to have a say in how education tax dollars were raised and spent. And I don't know if we're ever going to get back to that situation where the local property tax owner or payer has the ability to have some say in that discussion. But we really do have to take a look at the way that we fund education and make it sustainable in such a way that we can afford it.
Since the start of the session, Republican Party operatives have also been working to make sure that party priorities stay on the front burner. Party Chair Dave Sunderland has been aggressive in attacking the statements of Democratic Governor Peter Shumlin and House Speaker Shap Smith. Today on the program, we're going to talk with two prominent Republicans about their shared strategy and where they differ. And we'll hear from listeners about how they think the party can make a difference in Vermont politics, despite being in the minority. If you have a comment about the Vermont Republican Party or want to share where you think the party should be going, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts online at vpr.net. David Sunderland is the chair of the Vermont Republicans. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Don Turner is a representative from Milton and the House Minority Leader. Representative Turner, nice to have you back as well.
Thank you, Jane.
Don Turner, in November, you said that despite the fact that Republicans are still in the minority, 9 more seats in the House means there will be 1 more Republican in most of the committees, and you thought that would make a difference. Has it?
I believe it has, Jane. We have picked up a couple vice chair positions, and we have additional members on a number of committees. So I believe that we are having more of an impact than we have in the past, but we have to realize we still are in quite a large minority, and that the Democrats have 30-plus more seats than we do.
So when you say, though, there are vice chairs who are Republicans of some of the committees, and you think it has made a difference, can you point to anything that you think has happened because the Republicans have more members, or hasn't happened because Republicans have more members?
Well, what it gives us, Jane, is a greater working ability with the chair. We have the vice chair of the Appropriations Committee. We also have the vice chair position in the Education Committee. So those are two key committees this session, being that we're dealing with the cost and, you know, refunding of education. And we heard loud and clear from Vermonters that the cost of living in the state is just unsustainable. So we've got to rein in state spending, and we feel that Representative Fagan, as vice chair of Appropriations, has a good spot to be in to help us do that.
Dave Sunderland, how do you see Republican gains making a difference in the political process this session?
Well, I certainly think that Don's job there has become a bit easier. I think that the voice of the Republicans in the House and the Senate carries a lot more weight now. I think we saw when the Republicans held a press conference and introduced some healthcare legislation that it was given a lot more credibility than it may have been last year or in the last several years. So I think although we're still in a minority status, certainly, and there's still a lot of work to do on behalf of Republicans in the state, we are gaining momentum. And I think people are realizing it, and that our ideas are getting more of an ear than they would have in the past.
We got a couple of comments from listeners before the show who were frustrated in the candidate that Republicans ran for governor. Joe in Grand Isle says, how did the Republican Party just barely manage to lose the last Vermont gubernatorial election with a Republican candidate that was not very well known in the state and who had a limited campaign war chest? In hindsight, for me, it was an election for the taking. Was it a case of poorly executed pre-election polling? And Dave says, I don't understand why the GOP didn't run an experienced and more credible candidate for governor in the last election. If they had, Governor Shumlin wouldn't have been easily defeated. I think they mean would have been easily defeated. And Dave says, didn't they see all the problems the Shumlin administration was having? So what about that, Dave Sunderland?
Well, we certainly did make a strong case over the year leading up to the election with the the faults and the troubles that the Shumlin administration was having on several different fronts, including jobs in the economy and the affordability of the state, with their plans at that time for a government takeover of the healthcare system. You know, in retrospect, I think we're very proud of the candidate that we ran and the job that he did. I think Scott Milne ran a campaign that appealed to Vermonters because he was trustworthy. He had good ideas about where government should be focused and how we can best get the affordability of Vermont back under control, how we can improve our economy. I think Scott's campaign suffered in that he got such a late start. If it were not for that, I think he would have been able to become better known to Vermonters and would have been able to raise more money and reach out to more people. You know, in retrospect, I certainly wish he had jumped in the campaign earlier. But we're very proud of the race that he ran. It was the closest election in Vermont's history. And I think he did a fantastic job, and we're proud of him.
We're talking today with House Minority Leader Don Turner and Republican Party Chair Dave Sunderland. They're giving us a sense of how the party tries to organize its priorities and how party officials interact with elected politicians. Listeners, if you have a question about the Republican strategy in Vermont, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're going to talk a little bit about strategy and party cohesiveness in a little while. But Don Turner, first from you, I'd love to get a sense of what your top priorities are this session and what you think the Republican priorities are.
Okay. Well, our party, our caucus, we met right after the election to organize, and we had a committee working on that. What I wanted to do with this committee was to make sure that we put together a roadmap of priorities for our caucus for this session based off what voters had told us when we were out campaigning, knocking on doors, and so on. So it was important to get that information on paper and that roadmap created while memories were fresh in their minds. Once we did that with that committee, we brought it to the caucus leadership, and they tweaked it a little bit, but our main priorities for this session is, number one is to put Vermont back on sound and sustainable fiscal path. Number two is reduce the property tax burden on Vermonters by addressing unsustainable education costs and cost growth. Number three was to provide access to quality health care that all Vermonters can afford. We wanted to promote economic development and job creation while retaining existing business. And our final, or number five priority, is to ensure clean water for next generations of Vermonters. These, I think, are priorities that all Vermonters are interested in, and we are going to continue to work this session to do that.
We got a note from Al in West Berkshire who says, despite all the promises made by all the politicians to reduce our tax burden, at 69 years of age, I have yet to see a meaningful reduction in my taxes. I have, however, seen simultaneous reductions in services and increases in my taxes. And Al says, what specifically is the Republican plan to reduce our tax burden? And will Republicans be proposing bills that are being advanced by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council? Don Turner, you first.
I'm not affiliated with ALEC. A number of our caucus members are, so I'm not sure what ALEC's priorities are. Again, I want to reiterate, my priorities are what I heard from my constituents and many of our other caucus member constituents around the state. So maintaining the cost of living in Vermont, or reining in spending to put us on a more sustainable path, I'll cite one example. Last week, the fee bill was on the House floor. It raised approximately $2.8 million in new fees, directly impacting the cost of living in Vermont as well as the cost of doing business. Our House caucus, 52 of the 53 members opposed that bill. And our stand is that we can't support raising fees, taxes, or generating new revenue if we're going to rein in the cost of living in Vermont. That's the same approach that we're going to take with the budget. We believe that the state needs to level fund the budget with revenue growing, or forecast to grow, at just over 2.6%, and the governor's proposed budget at 4.5%. we continue that structural deficit that Governor Shulman and his administration have created, putting us in a deeper hole, thus increasing the cost of living in Vermont. So there's an example so far that we've been able to do as a caucus, and the key is to work together to keep the caucus focused on these issues that I outlined, the priorities of the caucus and Vermonters, and that's what our intent is to do the rest of the session.
Dave Sunderland, when we had Senator Joe Benning on the show at the beginning of the session, he said that he didn't see any way out of the budget hole we're in, now at about $112 million, without raising taxes. But he said, quote, "I am in no way, shape, or form proposing new taxes, and I probably wouldn't vote for them if they were instituted." Nonetheless, he thought they would happen and they'd go through. So does the fact that Republicans are a minority allow you to sort of gripe from the sidelines without ever having to compromise because, you know, you can be overridden?
Well, certainly being in the minority comes with a large set of disadvantages. However, I think it's important to note that Republicans in Vermont see the root of the problems that we face economically with really the reckless spending that's been happening at the hands of the majority in Montpelier really just the uncontrolled growth in state spending. It has translated to higher taxes. It's translated to a bigger government that in most cases is not serving Vermonters better. Can we make a difference? Yes, we can make a difference. I think we can continue to shine the light on the problems from a basic economic standpoint that are occurring in Montpelier, and offer solutions, better solutions that provide Vermonters with a better cost of living and with an economy that grows and actually creates jobs.
So specifically, though, with the budget, with that budget hole, budget gap of about $112 million, if raising taxes is not an option for Republicans, I realize you're not in the legislature, Dave Sunderland, but you watch this very carefully, what would you do?
Solving a budget deficit that's been created over a period of 4 to 6 years is a tall task to take on in a single year, and I think it will take longer than a single year to overcome it.
So you would not balance the budget? It's not required by the Vermont Constitution. You would go without a balanced budget this year?
No, I think we need to look at the spending side. I think we need to look at what government programs are truly working and are truly efficient. Weed out the waste and the abuse that's in the current systems. Make our government more streamlined. Make it more effective in serving Vermonters. And I think by doing that, we'll get a long way towards closing that gap and quite hopefully all the way. I think it's important to note that we started down this this road that has led to a $112 million budget deficit about 6 years ago when Democrats, over the veto of then-Governor Jim Douglas, they overrode his veto of the budget and imposed a budget that grew at a much higher rate. Governor Douglas's budget was about 3%, and the Democrats forced through a budget increase of about 5%. And that 5% growth has continued ever since then under the Democrats' control. And if it weren't for that, if we stayed closer to the 3% versus the 5% that the Democrats had imposed, we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in right now. So systemically, there's issues with the budget that need to be addressed in how we budget for our state in general and how it relates to the wage growth and the health of the economy in our state.
So, Don Turner, then going back to what Dave Sunderland is saying, how do you then push forward those priorities given that the Republicans are a super minority?
Well, we continue to work together, offering other alternative solutions, alternative ideas. And, you know, your question to Dave was how would he? Well, I'd like to give you some points on how we would address this budget gap. We have a subcommittee working with our appropriations people that has started before the session began and have started to scrub and comb through all areas of state government. And we've initially focused on the high cost areas. But we believe, and the governor actually made state agencies go through this exercise back in the fall, We believe that we need to keep spending level funded. So we would go to each agency and say, okay, you had this much money to spend last year. This is how much you got to spend this year. How are you going to address that? Okay, so we wouldn't be able to do, the governor's proposing to do the cost shift to address that in 1 year. That's a problem that's been growing for years, decades probably. We can't address the whole thing in 1 year, so that's going to be an area, as Dave said, it might take a few years to get to where we want to go, but we can't do the whole cost shift in 1 year. So we would say to state agencies, you reprioritize your spending, and we want to level fund you. And if there are areas that we can't level fund, then we'll have to look at reducing spending in others. For example, one of our priorities is to make healthcare more affordable and provide people greater access. We believe going to the state, going to the federal health exchange is the way to go. Of course, the majority and the governor are dead set against that. We know that there's an $8 to $10 million savings to the state of Vermont if we were able to make that happen. So those are some examples, Jane, of how we would address this issue without raising new revenue and keeping, you know, the plan that in a couple of years we'll be back to where spending is in line with revenue. And it's going to take some time to do that. And I'm not suggesting that we not balance the budget, but it may be reprioritizing assets, resources right now in the short term and moving forward.
Representative Turner, when you mentioned something like switching from the state healthcare exchange website to the federal exchange, that's something that you support. It's not something the governor supports, and it's not something that the Democratic majority seems to support. So when you have a situation like that, how do you avoid just getting frustrated and thinking, well, I'm not going to get anything done? You know, why am I even here?
Well, people, Vermonters need to understand that they have a voice here. And whether you're Republican or independent or Democrat, you know, I view my job as bringing respectful ideas and alternatives to what we're doing today. And that's what we're trying to do as a caucus. We're bringing realistic alternatives to what the governor and the majority is proposing. And it is very frustrating, and it's hard to keep caucus members excited about doing this. But, you know, if we had the fifth floor office, our priorities, our budget would look much different than Governor Shumlin's does today. And again, it would be these different uses of money to prioritize issues that we heard from Vermonters in the election that were important to them. And those are those priorities that we outlined earlier in the show.
We're talking today about how Republicans are trying to shape the debate in Montpelier. They're still a pretty small minority, but they picked up several seats in the House and in the Senate in November, and they're trying to make it count. We've got Party Chair Dave Sunderland and House Minority Leader Don Turner with us. And listeners, if you have a question, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the Republican strategy and how the party fits into the national platform. We also have listener emails on younger voters and balancing out the message nationally and locally. Stay tuned as Vermont Edition talks with Republican Party leaders, and add your thoughts by going to vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking with two prominent Republicans about how their party is trying to shape the debate in Montpelier. Dave Sunderland is chair of the Vermont Republicans. Don Turner is Milton State Representatives and House Minority Leader. And they're sharing their perspective. We're also hearing yours. If you want to chime in about Republican priorities, where you think the party should go, and how the party can influence what happens at the legislative level, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We got a note from Tyler who says, one thing that I've noticed is that the state GOP seems to do a poor job of recruiting and involving younger people. To my knowledge, the GOP does not offer an internship program, while the Democrats' program, by contrast, is very robust. What steps can the Republicans take to grow the party for college-aged people? Dave Sunderland, this seems like it should be right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I appreciate Tyler asking it. We have certainly stepped up our efforts to reach out to younger Vermonters, college age and above. And we do have an active youth committee in our state committee. We are, and it's a great question about the internship as well. We are reaching out now for summer interns. So if anybody in Vermont there is interested in helping the Vermont Republican Party, they'd be glad to have you call us. But we certainly realize the value that young people can bring to our party. I'm very proud of the staff and the leadership that we have in the party. It's a diverse group of folks, including those who are young, certainly quite younger than me, and they're doing a great job with lots of energy and enthusiasm and a real heart for the state of Vermont, and are willing to work hard to make things better for all of Vermont's residents. So, his question was right in our wheelhouse, and it's a real focus area for us this year.
Representative Turner, when you talked earlier about how it can be frustrating for your caucus to be in the minority and feel like it's difficult to get your priorities elevated in Montpelier or even passed, I imagine that can also sort of then be a self-defeating, you know, sort of circle where it's hard to recruit candidates because there's a minority and because the minority often feels like it's not being listened to or not able to get its legislative agenda passed. And so then you have more trouble recruiting candidates and you continue to have a minority. Do you see any way to shift that balance?
Well, yes, I do, Jane. We have started that change in course, as you might have seen in the last election. I believe we have the youngest serving member in the legislature now at 24 years old. We have a number of the new members who are under 30 or just barely 30. So that's exciting. Tyler's question was excellent, and I've now served 10 years in the legislature and have always found it very hard and frustrating that the D's had a number of young people running around and volunteering their time, and we had none. Since I've been leader, we've had college interns, and actually this year we have some high school interns working with members and working with the caucus leadership throughout the session. So that's exciting, but there is a lot of work that still needs to be done. We need to change the face of the Vermont Republican Party to be, you know, from the gray-haired guys like me who've, you know, in their 50s, to a much younger, energetic group of people. David and the Vermont GOP have worked very hard on that, and we continue to do that. We're working with outside agencies to help us as well. But that is part of a process, and we have the financial issues on our side. We know that if we don't change Vermont, people 25 to 40 are going to continue to leave this state, and they're not going to have jobs that they can afford to live the life that they've grown up and expect in the state. So it is a big lift. I'm proud of what's being done at the Vermont GOP. I'm excited about the new members that we have in our caucus and the people volunteering, the interns and so on in college and high school that are playing an integral part and assisting us in this legislative session.
Dave Sunderland, when you were elected party chair in 2013, there was what appeared to be a pretty big rift in the state party with two factions and some disagreement between where the party officials wanted the party to go and where elected Republicans in some cases felt like they wanted to go. Do you feel like Vermont Republicans in elected office and at the party level are more cohesive today?
Well, I do. Certainly, we work very closely with Don Turner and with Senator Benning, Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, and we'll continue to do that. I think we're pulling in the same direction. We have the same goals, and certainly the experience, gains that we made in November helped us to solidify that direction. And I think there's enthusiasm amongst the legislative members. I think that we're seeing more enthusiasm from the general public in terms of the direction that the Vermont GOP is heading. So I think those days are behind us, and we're looking forward to 2016 with great unity amongst our party and with an openness that I think is attractive to Vermonters.
Don Turner, do you agree? Does Dave Sunderland speak for you when he puts out press releases?
I believe he does. He's a little harsher than I am, so, but we all know that. We can chuckle about that. You know, it is a, you know, being the chairman of the of any party is a difficult task, and that you have to really drive the message home and really point to specific areas that sometimes are difficult. When you're a seated member such as myself and our caucus members, you know, I'm not an adversarial guy, and I work really hard. And one of my goals was to be respectful no matter if I totally disagree or not. And I've worked really hard at that. So I think that my role is to continue to, you know, point out the differences, to really highlight the priorities of the caucus, and to do everything I can in a manner that is respectful. And the goal is to hope that Vermonters, whether they're Republican or Independent or Progs or Ds, realize that we play a vital role here and that we're not the big bad Republicans that are tied to Washington or so on.
I want to come back to that about this relationship between Vermont Republicans and the National Republicans. But Representative Turner, before we do, I just want to talk a little bit about Dave Sunderland. You've been putting out a lot of press releases lately, and you've been fairly aggressive about doing what you call fact checks on the economy and on Governor Shumlin's and Shap Smith's agenda. Don Turner, before we get a little bit deeper into that with Dave Sunderland, does it make things difficult for you, though, if you're trying to have a bi or a tripartisan approach in Montpelier when there is what appears to some Democrats to be a very aggressive push from the Republican Party?
No, I don't think it does. I mean, the party has a role, and I respect the party's role and David's job and the executive director and the staff at the GOP. The Democratic Party has done the same thing in the past. So, no, I don't think it hampers, you know, us. We have a job to do. If you are familiar with our press releases, we do things a little bit different. But the message is clear. We are on the same page. We can't afford to continue down the same path that Governor Shumlin and Shap Smith have taken us. And we're going to continue to raise those issues. I'll do my job. I know Joe Benning will do his job. Our caucus will work together. And the party will provide the assistance and, you know, the hardline issues, hardline presentation that need to be done to make sure everybody gets where we're going.
So, Dave Sunderland, what is the approach here for you? You've been putting out press releases that target areas that you think the Democrats are failing Vermonters. And specifically, you name Governor Peter Shumlin and House Speaker Shap Smith. So what are you hoping to gain from these messages?
Well, I think it's important as a minority party that we point out areas where we think there's just inaccuracies in what the majority party might be saying in the data that they use and the evaluations of the current state of the state. Where there's gaps, I think it's our responsibility to shine a light on what the real data is and what the real truth is. And, you know, we are blunt, and I think that's good, but I think that we, as Don said, keep it on a factual basis and be as respectful as possible in the information that we provide. But it is blunt, and I think it's necessary to be that way.
We're talking with Dave Sunderland, chair of the Vermont Republicans, and Don Turner, who's Milton State Representative and House Minority Leader. We're talking about Republican strategy, Republican priorities in Vermont. We got a note from Terry in Middlebury who says, "I would probably never vote for a GOP candidate in a national election. I find that in Vermont, the far left drives the agenda so strongly, though, that I'm compelled to vote for Republicans to try to keep our state from slipping off the deep end." Thoughts there from Terry on why Terry votes for state Republicans. Representative Turner, you mentioned a moment ago that sometimes the big bad Republicans in Washington is not who you want Vermont Republicans to be. So what do you mean? How unaligned are you with the national Republican platform?
Well, you know, I don't know a lot about the national platform, and I don't participate in the national level. I participate very little in the national level. I think that's the party's role and Chairman Sunderland and so on. I am Don Turner. I represent Milton, and I am a much more moderate Republican than many maybe in Washington and actually some in my caucus. But as a leader, you kind of got to balance that, and I do the best I can to do that. But we in Vermont, you know, believe in helping our neighbors. We believe in making sure that the most vulnerable are addressed. We want to protect the environment, but we want to make sure people can afford to live here. People that grew up here, that raised their family here, we want their kids to stay here. And sometimes that means compromising on some of these issues, maybe more than we want to, but it is the right thing. And, you know, the speaker and I don't agree that often, but if we want to make sure and address a specific issue, I'm going to do everything I can in our caucuses to work to address that issue that's been pointed out. So that's kind of where I was going with that. I don't have anything, you know, personally against any Republican Washington, but I know that I hear that on a regular basis, and I want people and your listeners to understand who I am and what I stand for and what our caucus is working to do to better Vermont.
Dave Sunderland, do you think the Vermont Republicans are different from the National Republican Party?
Well, I do. Certainly, Vermont is a unique place. Vermonters are unique people within the nation. And likewise, the Vermont Republican Party is different than the National Republican Party.
Give me a specific where you differ.
Well, I think in Vermont, we've tried very hard over the last 15, 16 months or so to really broaden the base of the party, to be open to different ideas, different viewpoints, and to welcome people that we may not agree with 100% of the time, but we would agree with 80% of the time. And I think as long as we can agree that the focus of our state right now needs to be on growing our economy and creating jobs, making Vermont more affordable, bringing balance to the discussion back in Montpelier, then there's a place for you in the Vermont Republican Party. And, you know, I think we can bring that viewpoint and that outlook on politics to the national level.
Let's go to Rick on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if our guests could tell us a little bit about their views on global warming.
All right. Representative Turner, you first.
You know, I have not spent a lot of time on global warming. I understand this is a big issue nationally and so on. Vermont is so far ahead of the rest of the country in measures to help with this issue that I don't think it should be a tip-top issue for us when we have all these other problems. And some of these problems being addressed could actually help global, you know, curtail global warming going forward.
Dave Sunderland?
Yeah, I think there's science on both sides of the issue that that both sides use against each other. What I think is most interesting is, regardless of your opinion about it, there certainly is a market that Vermont can and should be exploiting to create jobs and to grow our economy to address those very issues. So I think regardless, there's a variety of different opinions even within the party and outside amongst the other parties about global warming and man's impact on climate change. But I would like to see us focus on how our economy and how our state here in Vermont can grow and reflect the values of Vermonters.
Dave Sunderland, we just have a couple of seconds left, but what's your plan? How many Republicans do you hope to see in the State House next session?
Well, you know, we made gains last year. I think if we can make similar gains in 2016, we'll be happy. I think we just need to continue to grow, to broaden our appeal amongst Vermonters and have another successful election. And I think we're going to do that.
That's Dave Sunderland. He's chair of the Vermont Republicans. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Don Turner is a state representative from Milton and House Minority Leader. Representative Turner, thank you as well.
Oh, you're welcome, Jane. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Coming up, we'll visit a photography exhibit in Morrisville that features the work of young local mothers. The workshop instructor wanted to take these women out of their comfort zones, so they went to Montreal for a day. The exhibit features the results. More on that next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. As part of a six-week photography workshop, a group of young women from Vermont ventured north to Montreal to shoot the city, but more importantly, to build confidence through the creative process. The exhibit, titled Through Our Lens, is on display at the River Arts Community Arts Center in Morrisville through March 2nd, and that's where I went last week to talk with Kelly Holt, a professional photographer who ran the workshop, and with Kayla Kaiser, one of the photographers featured in the exhibit. Standing in front of one of her pictures, Kaiser explained what drew her to the big structure in the center of the photograph.
You're coming over the bridge, and there's a structure there that's just beautiful. It's blue. It just spoke to me, so I had to take a picture of it. And
it looks like a big kind of a industrial skyscraper, maybe an apartment building. Do you know what it is?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think you're correct.
Ooh, so this one, the next one, is really beautiful. I have a soft spot in my heart for old buildings with old
yes.
signage, and it looks like maybe you do too.
Yes, I do. It actually runs in the family. So, this one actually means it's a life insurance. When we figured that out, when we had our photo exhibit show and stuff, somebody came in and said, oh, well, let's figure what this means. So,
because it's in French, of course.
Yes, it's in French, yep.
So what about, then looking at your other pictures, yes, you said you have a few portraits, you have a picture of a bird. Do you have sort of a theme that really resonated with you as you took pictures in Montreal?
Not particularly. My theme was just shoot for whatever spoke to me. So go for what I felt was an awesome photo time and stuff to capture it. So, yeah.
And Kelly, when you were advising students, what was your process? I understand you were talking about experiential photography, so maybe you could describe that a little bit.
Yes. So by experiential photography, what our workshop was really about was discovering a new environment through the lens of the camera. So it wasn't a technical photography one-on-one. The trip was about the experience of something completely new for the group and just responding to it through that lens of their camera.
Tell me a little bit more about what this project and what the trip was designed to do in addition to getting really fabulous photographs.
This workshop really grew from an interest in art and identity, building a sense of self-confidence through the actual process of art making, making discoveries, questioning those discoveries, and coming to a new place with yourself and with your work. And what I really tried to do was to take all of our artists in the workshop outside of their comfort zone and have them experience a different language, a different culture, a different country, coming from Vermont to a big city and respond to it and see what happens. It was really kind of a good experiment.
Kayla, when Kelly said she wanted to take the participants out of their comfort zones, you were nodding your head like that was absolutely part of it for you.
Yes, that was a big, big part. My daughter's 19 months and she was in daycare and I was very, very nervous about that. Got out of my comfort zone. They did it. They got us out of there, but it was okay. We all survived and we're all laughing, and having a blast. So it was a great day. Yep.
So what about, leaving your daughter in daycare and going on this trip? What about that took you so out of your comfort zone?
I had never been so far away from her. She's my first child, so, and only probably. So it's definitely been one of those things where it was a big step for us.
And that's actually part of the group you're working here with, women who are mothers, young women who are mothers. And so part of this project is not just learning an art form. It's families working together. Is that the organization
yes,
that you're
yes.
a part of? And so what's the aim of that organization and group, Kelly?
The Families Learning Together program is one of many programs offered by the Lamoille Family Center. And their goal is to support children and families in our community. The Family Center is one of 15 parent-child centers across Vermont, and they help young parents and children get off to a healthy start.
Kayla, for you, what's the benefit of being a part of this organization, Families Learning Together? What do you get out of it?
They have helped me. I'm going to be graduating this year. After I'm 27 years old, and I finally found a place that I can graduate. And
from high school or college?
High school.
Congratulations.
High school, and they're going to actually help me get into college too. So, yes, thank you. And I can have my daughter when she's sick and she can't go to daycare. She can come there, and I can work. And It's a wonderful feeling. I mean, the whole place is family oriented, and they don't just mean like that as a slogan or anything. When you come in, it's actually like a family. They're like a second family to us all. So,
what was it that got you over that hurdle and helped you to finally get your degree?
My daughter, pretty much. That was a big thing. Was I wanted to have an opportunity to give her and have a career and change my life. Yeah.
So will you show me the two pictures that you actually picked out that you wanted to discuss, and maybe you can get into what you got out of this workshop through those photos?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go look at them. So one of them you actually put up on an easel, so
yes,
we can see it.
Yes, that was the first one we were going to talk about. There's a gentleman sleeping on a cardboard box with a cup in his hand, and he's just curled up as far as he can be to stay warm. Homelessness is a huge, huge problem. So, and it seems like people shut their ears when it comes time to talk about it. And I've almost been there. So for me, it's like, how did he come to that part? Try to put yourself in their position, you know? One minute you have a place, you have a job, everything is going great. And then you get sick or something and you lose everything, you know? So right now I'm trying to actually get a shelter built in Morrisville too, so.
In thinking about putting a photo of somebody in such a vulnerable position on display, how did you think about the ethics of taking that photo and using it?
It definitely, I had some thoughts. Like, it was very moving to me any way I looked about it. And it was one of those things where I'm like, wow, if it's really affecting me in that way, then I don't think I should just hold it back. I probably should share it. And it may not be the exact emotions that you'd expect when you're looking at a photo, but at the same time, you really want those emotions captured too. So I'm hoping others get the same emotions, which I've seen a few of them have.
Well, Kayla Kaiser and Kelly Holt, thank you very much for showing me some of these photographs, and congratulations on the exhibit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
The photography exhibit that Kelly Holt ran and that includes Kayla Kaiser's photographs is called Through Our Lens. It's up at the River Arts Community Arts Center in Morrisville through the weekend. And we have some of Kayla's photographs for you to see at vpr.net. We're going to take some time now at the end of the show to share a sampling of the comments we've gotten recently. Patty Daniels, our managing producer, is here to help. Take it away, Patty.
Sure, Jane. So we have been talking a lot about education policy lately. Yesterday, we discussed school consolidation. Last week, we talked about how the teachers' union lobbies on education policy. And we've also looked at possible changes to property taxes that fund education.
PRH shared this with us. Education is a general societal good. It doesn't just benefit property owners. And while owning property might at one time have been a good indicator of wealth, that is no longer necessarily the case. Funding education should therefore come from a wider base.
And also weighing in is Brian, who writes, "The income tax is a fair way to increase much-needed revenue to sustain education. Ideas to cut education funding are short-sighted and undermine our ability to create well-educated children who can find good jobs and support our future economy. I'm happy to pay higher taxes as a fair way to contribute to education in Vermont." And Brian continues, "The property tax is problematic. As I age, I want to stay in my home, and I'll resent paying higher taxes on property with a lower income to support it."
And Karen posed this question. Is there real talk in the legislature about helping districts like Burlington and Winooski, two districts that welcome new residents but need financial help to survive? Burlington taxes are so high that voters are fed up, yet our schools are filled with many, many complicated needs. And yes, those needs cost money.
Well, on a different education topic, last week we also looked at the 40% rule, and that's a ratio that sets parameters on tuition at the University of Vermont. Basically, it means in-state tuition can't be more than 40% of out-of-state tuition. And in our story, we heard that some out-of-state students are crying foul.
But a listener going by the handle Connecticut Resident says, I'm not so sure this is harming the recruiting efforts of UVM, considering the record-breaking application numbers. It's a small state with majority low incomes that recruits heavily from out-of-state, high-income families. Having the ability to offer a lower in-state tuition without having to depend on the cash-strapped legislature allows many first-generation students from Vermont to attend.
And Connecticut resident finishes by saying, "The shock and feigned outrage of some out-of-state students is just that, feigned. UVM was 70% of out-of-state students 20 years ago when I attended, and it was very clear where the money was coming from. All removing this law would do is further diminish the ability of in-state students to attend, and an even smaller resident student body would mean even less of an incentive for the legislature to fund the even small amount that it does now."
All right, well, we want to hear from you on any of our subjects. You can listen back to all of our programs at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition.
And while you're there, tell us what issues you want to hear more about and join the discussion forums we have posted for each day's program.
Thanks, Patty.
You are welcome.
All right, that does it for today. Well, it's been cold than we're used to this winter, but what effect does that have on our rivers and the potential for ice jams this spring? Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with experts in meteorology, river science, and town planning to learn how they keep watch on our rivers as winter turns to spring. And yes, I promise it will someday turn to spring. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Singeri, with production assistance from Devin Karambalis. Mary Williams directed the show, our executive producer is John Van Hoosen, and our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.